We started the Hilchas Bishul Akum. The first handful of simanim were about foods. Which foods are susceptible to Bishul Akum? And then, when we opened up Sifhei, we turned our attention to from the item that's being cooked to the method of cooking. And we looked number one in Sifhei at one question, which was the kavana of the mevashel. The Nachri, who's doing the Bishul Akum, has to have Kavanas Bishul. As we saw, not necessarily Kavanah for Bishul of this particular food, but there needs to be Kavanah for, but he has to have lit the fire in order to do Bishul of something. It can't just be lit the fire in order to warm the house, or lit the fire in order to drain the swamp, in literal sense, or he fixed the electrical grid in order to power computers and mainframes and hospital health devices, and washers and dryers. It has to be that he was actually trying to light an oven, light this toaster, whatever it is, in order to do Bishul. That was issue number one in the world of the Masa Bishul. That was Sifhei. And then we progressed to the next number of Si'ifim, all of which dealt with, when we look at the Masa Bishul, what makes it non-Jewish Bishul as opposed to a sufficiently Jewish Bishul. How much Jewish participation do you need? So that was Sivav, and Zayin, and Ches, and Tes, and Yud. And those all dealt with the question of how much Jewish involvement do you need? If it was one session of Bishul, if it was two sessions of Bishul, is involvement with the cooking itself, involvement with the preparing the fire, or enhancing the fire, and Sif Yud Aleph sort of flowed from that, in terms of Suffolk Bishul Akum, what do you do if you're not sure whether there was Jewish participation or not? That's sort of a subtopic within the second major issue in the world of the Masa Bishul, which is the Jewish and non-Jewish participation in the Bishul. And now we come to a third aspect of the Maaseh Bishul discussion. This is really, in a certain sense, perhaps the last aspect of the Maaseh Bishul discussion, and that's Sif Yud Gimel. We'll come back to Sif Yud Beis afterwards, but let's open up with Sif Yud Gimel. Now, we've spoken about what the Nachri has in mind, how exclusively the Nachri is involved in the Bishul. Now, the third question is, what's called Bishul? Let's say he prepared the food in using a different method of food prep. Someone was talking to me this morning after Shacharis about a different area we've spoken in the past. Bishul doesn't only come in Bishul Akum. Obviously, Bishul comes up in terms of Bishul B'Shabbos. Bishul on Karban Pesach. We should be zochet to have to worry about those dinim soon. And, of course, Bishul comes up heavily in the world of kashrus, not just Bishul Akum, but in the world of transfer of flavor. And I put a trefa piece, accidentally trefa piece of meat falls into the chalent. So not only that piece of meat, I had a piece of a boar's head beef that didn't have a proper shechita, so that piece of meat is in the veil. I can't eat that piece of meat. Or there was a piece of ham that falls into the chalent. The ham itself, that's behemoth tzmeya. But the question is, how about the rest of the chalent? Of course, I have to fish out that piece of meat. I have to scoop out that piece of meat I cannot eat. But we know that generally the rest of we have a halakhic intuition that if there was a piece of ham in the chalent, I cannot eat the rest of the chalent either. Right? Or even if I fried ham and eggs in my frying pan, so even if I clean out my frying pan, we have this halakhic intuition that I can't make other eggs in the fry, kosher eggs in the fry, but it's going to become treif. Why? That's because of the principle of ta'am ke'ikr, which according to a vast majority of Rishonim is the idea d'oraisa. The Gemara discusses different possible makoros in the psukim. Ta'am ke'ikr means the flavor is like the thing itself. Just as the Torah says, I cannot eat basar behemoth tameya, I cannot eat a chunk of ham, a slice of bacon, or the Torah says, I cannot eat basar nevela, meat from a kosher species that did not have a proper shechita, Purdue chicken, a boar's head beef bologna, boar's head beef pastrami, so that's a lav of nevela, it's kosher species, but it didn't have a proper shechita, so that's a lav. You can't eat the basar nevela, you can't eat the basar behemoth tameya, Tom Kiriker tells me that the potato from the chal that the tree for me is also a kenyan. Why not? It's not basar. I'm eating a potato. I'm not eating basar nevela. I'm not eating basar baby tomato. This is a potato. It grew from the ground. Yeah. But Tom Kiriker tells me the flavor is like the thing itself. That if the just like I can't eat the piece of bacon, I also cannot eat a piece of potato, which is infused with the flavor of bacon. And then we take it a step further, not only when the flavor traveled directly from the bacon, from the ham, to the potato, even if I have a pot, a pan, a fork, a spoon, which absorbed flavor from the tray for bacon, and then I wash it, so now there's no residue left on the surface, but if it absorbed flavor, so then if next time I use it, I made the ham and eggs in the pan, then I scrub the pan clean, if I use the pan, I made ham and eggs for the morning, if I make a vegetable ratatouille in the afternoon in the same pan, we wouldn't allow you to eat the vegetable ratatouille. Why? Because the flavor of the ham went into the pan, and then a few hours later, it came out into the vegetable ratatouille. That's also an example of Ta'am Ke'ikr. So these are all Dvarim Shutim that you know, sort of. So that's number one, the terminology. Number two, when we think about, it's not always the case that it's a problematic. It's always worth asking a shayla because there are a lot of different factors that go into play in terms of whether that actually will have been a successful Tom transfer or not. We're not going to look at all of that right now, especially since the vote had been against learning principles of Asbach Ha'av. But let's look at one aspect, one dimension of that question is, was there a proper method of Tom transfer? So one method of Tom transfer is heat. If I made ham and eggs in the frying pan, that means it was hot, obviously, in the frying pan. The ham was scalding hot in the pan. The pan went up to 300, 400 degrees. That's why you use oil instead of water to fry it, by the way. Water would evaporate to 12. Oil evaporates at a much higher temperature, so you get much higher. You can fry with oil at a much higher temperature than you can boil in water. That's from a culinary perspective why you fry. It has halachic implications also in terms of kashering, but not for now. But the point is, the most famous method of Tom transfer, whether it's from food to food or between food and a kli, is through heat. I fried the ham in the pan, so now the flavor of the ham went into the pan. And then I cleaned it off, and then I baked fried vegetables in the pan. So the heat is going to take the flavor from the pan and move some of it, migrate some of it into the vegetables. Now my squash is treif because it has a ham flavor. Is there ever a way that you can transfer a tam without heat? Ever away. If it's cold, is it always good? Are you always cold? Oh, vinegar, yeah. Sharp. Yeah, and I'll come back to your question in a moment.
Onions.
Yes, this is important to know, and then we'll bring it in. Yeah, so there are several other methods of Tom transfer. There are probably three or four other methods of Tom transfer besides heat. One, which is not relevant to us right now in the context of Bishul Akum, but it's very kedai to know, is one of the types of Bulia Betzoning. Bulia is the absorption of flavor with cold. In other words, you could have time transfer number one is through heat. Then you have also bulia betzoning. So one that does come up you should be aware of is the combination of davar charif plus duchka de sakina. You have a sharp food like an onion or a lemon or a pickle or a jalapeno pepper. And if you just scoop it with a spoon, that's fine. There's not going to be any transfer of flavor. But if you have a combination of a sharp food and pressure, yeah, you cut it with a knife or you pierce it with a fork, puncture with a fork, those two factors together add up to a transfer of flavor. So if I have a cold onion and a cold knife and a cold plate, but I chop my onion with a fleshik knife, the onion is now fleshik. I thought, no heat. If I put the onion in a fleshik pan, okay, so there was heat. But this is a chiddush that Gemara has, the combination of those two things. You cut a bland food with a knife, with a clean knife, there's no transfer of flavor either. So if I cut an orange or cut an apple with a fleshik knife, it does not make the apple fleshik. assuming the knife was clean. If there's residue, it's a different thing. Here we're talking about no residue. We're talking about just the transfer of tam. So that's davar chara plus duchid the sakina. Three is also not so relevant here. Would be the Gemara says, Shacharach says, if you have a very porous food, if I pour milk over a raw piece of meat, cold milk over raw meat, just wash it off and you're fine. People might get a little, some people get palpitations. Not a smart thing to do. Certainly a violation of Rav Chavero to do that in front of other people. But and also, Sen Shacharach is not allowed to set up such a situation. But strictly speaking, if you pour raw milk, you pour cold milk over cold raw meat, it doesn't get absorbed. You just wash it away and you scrub it carefully to get rid of any surface residue. But nothing was nivla into the meat itself. But if you have a porous, let's say you have a well-cooked piece of meat, the Shulchan Aruch talks about details, cooked, grilled, you have a porous piece of meat, you pour milk over it, so then obviously, even if you wash up the surface, if it's porous, it's going to absorb like a sponge some of the milk. Okay, also not relevant for us. What is relevant for us in the Bishul Akum context is 4 and 5. One is mentioned by Akiva, Kavush and Maliach. The Gemara's terminology is Kavush Kimavushal. Kavush is like cooked. Maliach is Kiroseach. Maliach is like scalding hot. What's kavush and what's maliach? So kavush is when you soak it for a while. Either you soak it in liquid for 24 hours, like pickling, or if you soak it in a sharper liquid like vinegar, it might even be 15, 20 minutes. May really do the trick. Then as an aside, comes up in Hilchos Pesach and Hilchos Moror. When you soak your... So if you soak something... If you soak something in liquid for a long time, then that even a cold soak, a 24-hour soak, or a briefer soak in vinegar, that's already going to generate a transfer of flavor. It's kim avushal, it's as though it's cooked. We take that very seriously, the kim avushal. We also assume that if you were to soak lettuce leaves, if you leave your lettuce leaves, you want to clean off all the bugs, which is important. If you leave them soaking in water for 25 hours... They might not be very tasty. They're certainly no longer kosher for the mitzvah of maror because kavush kimavushal. It's the same as maror mavushal. Don't leave your, most people don't leave their maror soaking for 24 hours. But if you do, it's going to be a problem. If you left a piece of meat, raw meat, soaking in cold milk for 24 hours, you could no longer just say, I'll rinse off the outside and it's fine. No. Kavush kimavushal. 24 hours of soaking liquid, it will already cause an actual transfer, the flavor will be absorbed. And number 5 is if you salt things. If you salt things together, so maliach kiroseach, that's also the equivalent of heat, even though there's no actual heat. On the bags of salt they use for melting ice, they'll sometimes tell you it's icy hot. But the salt isn't actually generating any heat. It's just acting the same way heat would in terms of melting the snow. So I don't know if it's the same thing, But we also chadav a similar terminology maliach kiroseach. We see salting as in some senses equivalent of it being hot, even though the food is cold. So that can cause a transfer of flavor. I don't want to get too involved in the details, but again, these are the 5 methods of tam transfer: heat, davar chara plus duchas sakina, a liquid on something porous, a 24-hour soak, or even a shorter soak if it's vinegar. Kavush, and finally number 5 is maliach. We're going to in a moment turn our attention to Kavush and maliach and see how they play out Hilchos Bishul Akum, but first Yossi's been waiting very patiently.
So, the taste transfer, I was always under the assumption that if you were to do it multiple times, if you were to make vegetables out of hand, the first time it would be trafe, and as would all other times. But if it's just a top transfer, there shouldn't there be a limit of how many times you cook something in the pan when the taste is no longer coming out of the pan?
Yes, somewhat. I don't want to get too involved in the world of time transfer because I mentioned one dimension of the question is, was there a method of time transfer? And if there was, then you have to figure out how old is the time, and you have to look at volumes and vittel and koshering and so on and so forth. Sometimes subsequent use of the pen will count as kosher, and it won't always. I don't want to get too deeply involved in this question. Raymond.
What does kuliya
mean? Kuliya b'tzarim means absorption of flavor when it's cold. Without heat. Your classic bliya is heat. These other four are bliya b'tzonim. So now take a look at the, with this in mind, we appreciate where the Shulchan Aruch is coming from in Se'if Yud Gimel. Top of page 232 in the edition you have in front of you. Se'if Yud Gimel, Dag Shemalacho Akum. Or the non-grammatical pronunciation, Dag Shemalacho Akum. You have a fish that a non-Jew salted. Or peiro she'ishnan, or you have fruit that a non-Jew smoked. Smoked fruit. Smoked pear? I don't know. Smoked fruit. Sounds interesting. Ad she'chshir la'achila. Ad she'chshir la'achila. He salted it, or he smoked it to make it edible. Maybe. Yeah, perhaps. It depends how you make them. We'll get back to the detail of smoking moment. He said, well, maliach eno karasech b'gzei rezu, ma'ushon eno kibuvushol. Don't worry. Salting is not, there's a principle of a maliach karasech, but not in the context of bishul akum. There's a principle of kavush kibuvushol, soaking is not cooking, but not for, that's for transfer of flavor, but not for bishul akum purposes. And then the, and then the Ramah goes on to add, just to clarify, same for kavush also. Gam kavush ain't a kibavushal. Not only is ma'ushan, maliach doesn't count, ma'ushan doesn't count, gam kavush ain't a kibavushal. Lo asr ela bishol shalesh. That's it. Item number three in the world of the Masa Bishol is asri dafka bishol shalesh. If you're getting a bishol equivalent without fire, without heat, like a cold soak, extended cold soak, kavush, or salting things, maliach, or smoking things, ma'ushan, don't worry, that's not a problem. Where did this come from? Where did this come from? So this comes from the Rashba. I neglected to mention in the past. We've already come across the Rashba several times in the Siman. It's important to know, the Rashba is not only the author of Chidush Shemon Shas, and the author of a couple of thousand Tshuvas LaHalacha, Tshuvas HaRashba, tremendous, 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 probably at least 2,000, maybe 3,000 Tshuvas. Yes, incredible. He also wrote Sifrei HaLacha, most famous of which is called the Toras HaBayis. Toras HaBayis, his Rebbe, the Ramban, had written a Sefer Toras HaAdam, mentioned in the past. Ramban Toras HaAdam is on the Halachas of sickness, and death, and dying, and kvura, and avails. And he deals with medical malpractice, he deals with pikuach nefesh, and then he deals with kavukaria, and kavura, and avelos, and deals with the Tisha B'Av, and at the end he has his philosophical section, Shara Gemul, on the hashkafa of Tzadik V'Ra'os. That's Toras HaAdam. The Rashba, his Talmud, we're going to say for another halacha sefer called Toras HaBayis. Halacha of the man, and halacha of the house. Toras HaBayis is largely about kashrus and hilchos nida, and also a little bit about the Nitzil Sedayim, one or two other topics. So in the kashrus section, he, among other things, talks about much of the first half of Yoredeya is really built on the Torah's Habayis. Shchita, Trefas, Melicha, Basabachal of Taruvas, Bisholab Machalayakam, this whole, the first 120 plus Simanim, Yain also, 130, 40. All the first half of Yoredeya is all kashrus. Chel Kalf, the first half of Chel Beis. It's built around, structured around the Rashba's Toras HaBayis. And we quote the Rashba often in this part of Shulchan Aruch. It's typically, it may also be, he may also have written about the same topic in his Chidushim on Avodah Zarah or Chulin, but typically, like here, it's in the Toras HaBayis. So the Rashba writes in Toras HaBayis, when he's discussing Bishul Akum, he says, yes, I know Kosh Kibavushal, I know that Maliach Karaseach, so what's the story with this case? The Nachri made pickles. Never used any heat, just soaked the pickles. Soaked cucumbers are edible raw. Let's say you have an item that's not edible raw. He pickled eggplant, or he pickled meat, he pickled fish. And now it wasn't edible raw, and now it's delicious. So is that a problem? Bishlach, kovish kimavushal. There's time transfer, it's kimavushal. So he cooked it. Rashi says, Hold your horses. Only a ke mevushal. It's only a ke'en. Not actually mevushal. So for some areas of halacha, we make that equation. Here we do not. How does he know? How does he know? So he has several riots. Number one, he says, the Mishnah with which we started, Mishnah Laman Hay, was shlakos, called the cooked foods. Okay, that alone gives me indication, not necessarily a proof. Maybe this is also included in shlakos. He points out the next Mishnah, the Flamatas and Avodah Zarah, Mishnah talks about foods that you may eat, which you purchase from a non-Jew. One of the examples of foods that don't need hashgacha is kvashim, pickled foods, in context where you know that the recipe is kosher. You know that there's no wine or that sort of thing used in the recipe, so then it's fine. Sounds like the fact that he was kovesh it is not in and of itself a problem. The Vilna Gaon is another raya from Daf Mem Amud Beis, Gemara Daf Mem Amud Beis, the very end of the parak. Another raya that the Kavosh and Maliach don't make Bishol Akum. And then there's Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi talks about smoking. Yerushalmi raises the issue about smoking, and at least in the world of Bishol Akum, we're willing to make all that Ma'ushan is not Kimavushan. That's where this sif comes from. Now, there are a couple of, most of you don't go in either sense, in any sense, and probably most of you don't have freshly pickled itnas. You probably don't have non-Jewish neighbors who pickle things on the spot. But
your neighbor,
Barat?
Yeah, my neighbor's name is Nikki. He pickles things.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So Yesh La'ayin. So what does come up a lot is microwaving. Microwaving. You're going to go to a kosher Dunkin' Donuts, and they have raw eggs, and they're going to microwave the eggs. Now, yesh la'ayin if those eggs, which are coming in a sort of a pre-made disc, whether they are, I'm not kidding, whether they are olam shulchan malachim when they come out of the microwave, so that yesh la'ayin whether it's a problem anyways. But the other question is, well, who says a microwave is bishul? It's not bishul shel esh, or is it? So there's an interesting discussion about the ishun. Interesting discussion about this din the Yerushalmi has about smoked foods. So the debate that post can have is that only a kula by cold smoking or even by hot smoking? In other words, when you smoke food, so the way it works, you have your smoker down below. You have a fire that's loaded with the right type of wood, and often you'll put in some extra moisture to really get the smoke going, and you'll pick, depending on what flavor you want, what type of food you're dealing with, a mesquite or axle, hickory, whatever, you pick your wood, and then you burn your wood in a way that generates a lot of smoke, and then that's down below, and up top, at the top of the smoker, you have your meat or fish or fruit, whatever it is that you're doing, hanging there, and it's getting cured by the smoke. But there are two ways you can do that. Can be done in a way that by the time the smoke hits the food, the smoke is already not yasla's, but it's a cool smoke, it's cold smoke, meaning it's only processing the food by the acridity of the smoke. It's like maliach, as opposed to a case where you have hot smoking, where the food is getting processed through a combination of the heat, that the smoke is hot, and it's not just steam, it's smoke. Or it's not just, you know, plain heat, it's smoke. That's something the post-gum debate. It may be the whole cool is only cold smoking. Again, you're saying, okay, cold smoking, hot smoking, you know, maybe I enjoy eating lox, but I'm not really making lox. And how often does that come up? It does come up. Okay, it's a shayla. You're giving a hashkacha on a smoking plant. You're giving a hashkacha on a lox factory. So do you have to, again, as I said in the past, bishul akum means, if it's bishul akum sensitive, it means I can't just have a mashkiach who comes and goes and spot checks, we would call yotzei v'nichnas, who's going to make sure that the ingredients are kosher. He has to be there to turn on the fire for every run. Or if you're a Sparty, he has to be there mamash to like, he's going, the fire's ready going, he's going to be hanging up the fish. It's going to be a lot more expensive, complicated, labor intensive. If it comes up even by how many smoking plants are there, you know what's even more common than smoking? Is steaming. Specifically, every single canned food sold in the supermarket, I believe, almost every, if not every, is prepared in a steam jacket. Whenever you open a can, you'll notice that there's a little bit of empty space on top. And head space is left there because they cook the food in the can. They don't cook the food in a pot and then pour it into cans. They put raw food into the, that's why it's always canned with liquid. They put raw food into the cans, pack it with liquid, seal it, and then what they do is they put the cans on a conveyor belt and they cook the can, the food in the cans. How do they cook it? Right there. They don't hold the cans over the fire and, you know, rotate it. This is mass produced. But they have something called a steam jacket, which is an enclosed area. There's a conveyor belt runs through this enclosed area that gets filled from below with superheated steam. It circulates through, and they kind of steam keeps circling down to the boiler back up so they can maintain a constant temperature. And they set the speed, like as with those toaster machines that sometimes have in the cafeteria, they set the speed of the conveyor belt so they get the right amount of seconds for each can to be in the steam jacket. Depending on what the, you know, presumably fish needs more time than peaches, whatever it is. But that's how canned foods are made in modern industrial canning plants, is with a steam jacket. Now that's a shiloh. So there are two shilohs with canning. One shiloh is there a kashrus question? That's not our topic right now, but it's worth being aware of. Is you have to deal with, is there a problem, a kashrus problem? Because the water keeps circulating. It goes up a superheated steam, then eventually cools down, comes back down to the boiler, and gets heated again. And canning plants, a large food company may own its own dedicated canning plants, and they even have dedicated lines for particular foods. But if you're a smaller outfit, you don't own your own canning plant, you rent their canning plants that rent space, rent time, rent hours to different small food manufacturing. You'll come in, and either maybe you'll have a regular kvius, we're in every Tuesday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., whatever it is, or we'll just occasionally rent time, and that's enough for whatever amount of stock we produce for our customer base. The problem is, so I'm doing a canned tomato sauce. Tomato sauce is gewaldig. Everything that went into the, in our own factory, everything that went into the cans was kashrus lamahadrin. Yeah, but then we brought everything raw to the canning plant. We went through the canning plant. Before all you know, 3 hours earlier, there may have been a different company canning clams. Same water, same boiler. Is that a problem? Is it not a problem? There are different ways of dealing with that. I think the OU solution, I believe, is to, they put a Dover HaPosel, Dover HaPo game, and then they put a small amount of pine oil into the water that they use for steaming, so that way any flavor is nifsal me'achila before it even gets into your canned tomato sauce. And there are other ways of dealing with it also. But that's one issue that comes up with the steam jackets. The other question is bishalakam. Bishalakam. Maybe that's your solution. Maybe no canned food is bishalakam sensitive because it's not really a bishal. It's just ketur. It's just steaming. So that's a big debate among contemporary poskim. And it sounds related to this question about the smoking. As I said before, Rishalmi says that smoking is fine. We pass based Rishalmi in the Dharam that Ishun Nachri is mutter. Again, smoking cigarettes or anything worse than that is not mutter. But food which was smoked by a non-Jew is not susceptible to Bishal Akum. The question again is, though, does that only mean a cold smoke or even a hot smoke? So if you say hot smoking is fine, then there's room to say that steaming is also the same. Maybe if you say cold smoking, now what's the shayla? The shayla is, when we matir ishun, is it because it's not heat-based, or is it because there's a vehicle that's conveying the heat? It's indirect. And also maybe you have the fact that it's, you have the acridity of the smoke, which is contributing. So when you do steaming cans, there's no acridity, and there is heat. The only way to make it, some are make it, is to say, no, the whole idea of Ishun is that Bishal Akum is the only way when the heat is going directly from the heat source to the food. But since here you have the smoke or steam, which is a vehicle to transport the heat, that's much. There are posts where make it, many are not. The same shiloh with the radiator. To cook on the radiator. So, if a Nachri cooked food on a radiator, Dira life, dorm life, right? Nachri cooked food on a radiator, so those who are makel on the steaming, we makel that too, because the boiler is down the basement. Then you have the water or steam, which is mamish, kitor, which is rotating up through the pipes and back down, which is conveying the heat, the vehicle to convey the heat from the basement to the to this surface, whether we want the heat or not. So as again, there are poskim are makel in the kitor, but many are machmer. That's why I think most hashgacha organizations will assume that canned foods in principle are bishul akum sensitive, like unless it's nechal chai or it's anywhere lal shulchan lachim. But the steam itself is not going to help, and that's the microwave shayla. The microwave shayla is a little bit better than the steam because there really is no heat source. It's not bishul shel esh. It's you have a hack essentially to get the food to turn hot, but there was never any heat source. You just used radiation to get the water in the food to turn hot. That's why many poskim are made on microwaves. The microwaves are not bishul akum sensitive. That's why there's a range of opinions, a range of practices among different kosher Dunkin' Donuts. In terms of different kosher Dunkin' Donuts in the New York area are covered by different hashgacha organizations. So some hashgacha organizations take the approach that there's not a problem whatsoever. This is included in the Maliach Eino Koroseach Kovar Sheni Kelevushal. Microwaving is fine, nothing to talk about, mutter. And then that no issue with the eggs. And other kosher organizations take the approach of it's mutter, but we insist that you have the right to do otherwise. And there are some kosher Dunkin' Donuts where I think there's a sign that if you want to, you can request to go behind the counter and press the button on the microwave yourself. You turn on the microwave, then there's no problem of bishul akum. Again, most assume that microwaving is fine. Yeah. I mean, those who are makel on the steaming.
I'm saying even if I put something in the oven, right? It's not directly on the fire. It's just that the air.
You're saying there's still that's
what
true.
What does that mean?
Where do you draw the line?
Obviously, we're not directly putting something in a fire, but
Right. The fire is heating the air, and the air is heating the food. So where do you draw the line? That's a good question. I'm not sure how you would be magnified the difference. There's an intuitive difference, I think, but I'm not sure.
Or that you would say, what's the difference between the steaming example where the cans become hot, or if you have a pan directly?
No, it's not that the cans become hot. It's that I have a boiler over there, I have the cans over here, the cans with the food over here, and there's steam that's circulating back and forth between the boiler and the steam jacket, which is cooking the food. But it's not... Yeah, look, that's fine. But bishul akum has nothing to do. There are two issues. One is the flavor. The other one is bishul akum. In terms of flavor, that's a good question. Shaila, whether flavor we see flavor is penetrating through the walls of a kedera. Not for now. It's a line shulchan aruch siman sadi beis. In terms of bishul akum, okay. If I have a sealed package and the nachri cooks food in a sealed package, that's a bishul akum problem. A double wrapping solves the problem of flavor transfer. Double wrapping does not solve the problem of bishul akum. If I gave a non-Jewish chef raw salmon, double wrapped, he just made a treif by grilling it.
What's the difference between a microwave and an oven?
Because microwave, there's no heat source.
So what does that mean, there's no heat source? Because
the way microwave does is back up.
By the way, it vibrates the water
bottle. Right.
But I was saying with the oven,
there's a fire. There's a source of heat, and that's conveying heat, conduction, convection to the food.
So the water's now the heat source.
Water is the food.
There's
energy, but not heat.
Water is the food,
though. It is in the food.
We're using it as a hack, but it's in the food.
Are you saying the water inside the food is not part of the food?
The hot smoke.
No, I am. I'm just saying
the water. There's a middleman.
Yeah.
Right, right. So let's just re-encapsulate. Let's encapsulate again. Let's make sure we come out with maskanas, and we'll clarify this point also. The Shulchan Aruch is clear that if although there's a din of Bishul Akum, but if a Nachri pickled, Kvishas Nachri is mutter. If a Nachri salted, also again, assuming the kosher ingredients, if a Nachri is kovesh, that's mutter. If a Nachri is moleach, that's mutter. If a Nachri smoked, we assume that's mutter, definitely by cold smoking. So all those three cases are cases where you're getting sort of the same result as cooking, but there was no application of heat. So those three cases are all vadai mutter. The discussion in poskim, well, how about if it was hot smoked? That's already not 100% clear with mutter or not. Even less likely whether it's mutter is steaming, because that's in a sense, you have even less leg to stand on lahatir than the hot smoking. A little more likely to be mutter is microwave. Again, there are those ramachmir, but it's better than the hot smoking, it's better than the steaming, because you're not applying heat. It's pretty close. You're ending up with a hot food without actually applying any heat to it. So that's why, you're saying, oh, I am heating it. I'm using microwaves to heat water. And then the water is heating it. Definitely it's not ash, that's for sure. It's definitely not a heat of ash. No, the steam is being heated by the boiler. I have a boiler. Oven is a fire also.
Modern oven.
It's not a modern oven. If you open your oven, you're not going to see the fire.
There's
heating rods, though.
There's heating rods. There's no ish. Right. Heated metal, that's heated until it glows, is considered to be, has the same halachic status as ish. To the extent that if you heat metal until it glows, you're in violation of halacha of mavir. Which is why we are makel, that you can use an incandescent bulb for Havdalah. As a matter of fact, the Chaim Ezer, Achi Ezer, was the leading poskim of Eastern European Jewry between the two world wars, supposedly was makbid to dafka make Havdalah on an incandescent bulb for some point during his life in order to tell people that they should not be turned on incandescent bulbs on Shabbos. That's why if you turn on a filling bulb, an incandescent bulb on Shabbos, that's a malacha deraisa. To turn on LEDs or fluorescence, that's probably just the same isadra button as any other use of electricity. But if you turn on an incandescent bulb, that's mamash malach deraisa because you're heating the metal until it glows. We consider that to be esh. As we discussed Hanukkah time, we are machmir not to use that for near Hanukkah, perhaps because we require for near Hanukkah zeichel and menorah. We require psila and shem. You don't have that duality by a incandescent bulb. But for near Shabbos and for near Havdalah, it absolutely does work. If you are in a hotel or in a dormitory and you need to light near Shabbos, and it's against the regulations to light a candle, you should not light a candle because they told you not to. So you should not light a candle. What you should do is come prepared with a handy dandy little old school incandescent bulb nightlight and make a bracha and turn it on, make a bracha, depending whether you're male or female. But you can absolutely make a bracha on incandescent bulb. That's mamish ner Shabbos. And that's mamish esh with respect to melechas mavir, and presumably also would be esh with respect to Bishul Akum. You're not going to get away with that, but if it's a microwave, then already there's more room to maneuver. Amir Tashem, now I'm glad to hang around afterwards for more questions, but we're about to run out of time. So let me just sketch out where we're going next time. I think next year will probably be our last year in Bishul Akum, and we will be focused on two things. Number one, Si'ifim Yud Beis, Yud Dalet, and Tezvav, wrap up what we began beginning the siman with in terms of how you define Nechal Chai, a little more detail in terms of that. And then Siman Test Zion is going to deal with a couple of miscellaneous issues in Bishul, a number of special cases of Bishul Akum, as well as the question of the aftermath of Bishul Akum. Do you have to kasher the kelim, which could be a major, major issue. Let's say all of a sudden people started realizing that they have a Bishul Akum problem in their kitchen, and they were never really attuned to that. Does that mean you now have to kasher your whole kitchen? Or just get rid of the food, but the kelim are okay? That's a not insignificant question. Or let's say a Nachri or Nachris used your favorite frying pan to make eggs out of the goodness of his or her heart, not realizing that he or she was creating a Bishlachim problem. So you very kindly smile and say, thank you so much, and then wait until the person leaves to dispose of the eggs or to pass them on to a non-Jew who could make use of them. And then the question is, kashering frying pans is not a simple matter. You have to kash your frying pan or throw it out, or can you clean it and reuse it? We will pick up with that next time. And finally, I'll leave it with a postscript with this interesting Bishul B'Shabbos ramifications of some of the things we spoke about. Not necessarily the same, but there is discussion also about microwaves on Shabbos. Relates to the sugya of Bishul B'Chama and Mishnah Daf Lamed Ches and Shabbos. There's more to say in terms of that. Rabbosai, enjoy the rest of your day.